music from the opening of John Ford's classic Western, Stagecoach. In less than 90 seconds, the music takes us west onto the frontier. There's beauty, there's danger, and there's a sense that settlers moving west will change the landscape. In this portion of the afternoon magazine, we remember the Western. We look back at the dialogue and images of the Western and the genre's celebration of the frontier myth. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Two guests join us this afternoon. They are Peggy Thompson and Sayeko Usakawa. They put together a collection of great lines of dialogue as well as posters and photos from classic Westerns. The title of this collection, Tall in the Saddle. Do join the conversation this afternoon. Do you find Westerns appealing? Why? What's your favorite Western? And perhaps you'd share a line or two you find particularly memorable from a Western. Here are the phone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Outside Champaign, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Peggy Thompson is an award-winning screenwriter of feature films and shorts. She's an assistant professor of screenwriting at the University of British Columbia. Sayeko Usakawa is an editor. She's been editing books for over 30 years and is now editorial director of Douglas & McIntyre. Join us this afternoon with a phone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Well, good afternoon to the two of you. Welcome.
Hi, Celeste.
Hi. Do I have another guest as well?
Oh, yes.
Nice to hear your voices this afternoon. Here at the top of our conversation, if you would please, would you share a couple of your favorite lines from Tall in the Saddle? Peggy Thompson, you want to start?
Sure. Well, I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan, and one of my favorite lines is from Hang 'Em High, which is, "Some people call this hell, but you're still in Oklahoma Territory."
And Sayeko?
Well, mine is about the bigness of the West, and it's from a minor film called Man in the Shadows, and the quote is, "Over in Europe, there aren't five or six countries as big as this ranch."
Hmm.
And one that I really like is Spencer Tracy from Broken Lance talking to his cowhands who are doing a roundup, and he goes, "Brand them, don't barbecue them."
Very nice.
Yes. I mean, I guess the thing about dialogue in Westerns is that it's kind of full of a lot of folk wisdom, and there's always a little grain of truth there, no matter how kind of demented the Western is, from Santa Fe Trail. Kansas is all right for men and dogs, but it's pretty hard on women and horses.
Yeah. And as a screenwriter, would you like to write a Western?
I don't know. I've actually written a radio play about Calamity Jane called Calamity Jane and the Fat Buffalo Moon, and I don't know that I've ever had so much fun writing anything as I did writing that. It was about Calamity Jane and her illegitimate daughter that she gave up, and it was kind of based on a series of letters to and from Jane to her daughter. It's an interesting time to try and recreate, because there's the reality of the West, which is one thing, and then of course there's the mythology of the West, which is something else entirely. And as a writer, you kind of go, well, how much reality do I want to do, as opposed to how much mythology? And I think it's the mythology that we remember from the classic Westerns, these larger-than-life characters traversing across the frontier.
Sayeko, what is it about the Western that appeals to you?
Well, I think it's that sense of freedom, of people getting a fresh start on life, being able to make their own future. And I think a lot of Western characteristics like, gumption and sticking to it are what appeal to me. And also because when I was growing up, it was one of the few genres that had strong women characters and women who did things. You know, they were out there on the range and, they led active lives.
And there were, you could find women in different kinds of roles as well. They were homeschool marms, hardworking ranchers or farmers' wives, saloon girls, prostitutes, of course, gunfighters like Calamity Jane.
Right.
Even though they're stock characters, there's still quite a variety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't just women at home, although women at home played really powerful roles, and there were matriarchs like a character Judith Anderson played in a film called Pursued. Robert Mitchum, who just died recently, played her son. And, you know, when she was advising him, she said, "A person's got to find his own answers. We're alone, each of us, and each in a different way." And there was this sense of, you know, elders were respected in the West. You know, they were people who knew things. And there were also tough women, too. Well, not tough, but, you know, independent women. There was a gold prospector in a film called Night Passage who when James Stewart was trying to join up with her party for a little safety, she had a mule train with her, and she said, "I ain't looking for company. 10 jackasses in the bunch is enough."
How about the character Frenchie?
Frenchie, yes. That was played by...
Marlena Dietrich.
Yes.
And Destry. Destry, yeah. Rides Again.
And Destry, yeah. She was terrific in both. I mean, she's not a person you would ever have thought of as a Western heroine, but, you know, there she was.
Yeah.
And in Destry, the sheriff called out to her as she was going by, "Wait a minute, lady." And she was playing a saloon singer, and she felt insulted and said, "Who are you calling a lady?"
Peggy Thompson. Your thoughts about Frenchie. We're going to hear a little something from Frenchie here in just a moment, but you want to weigh in on Destry Rides Again and Frenchie?
Yeah, Destry Rides Again was a 1939 film directed by George Marshall, starring Marlena Dietrich and James Stewart. And one of the wonderful things about Westerns is that because it's the most prolific genre, there's over 7,000 Westerns apparently have been made since the beginning of film history, just over 100 years ago. So because there were so many made, every major star, even the most unlikely, such as Marlena Dietrich, made a couple of Westerns. And Dietrich made not just Destry Rides Again, but Rancho Notorious, another kind of classic dark Western. Destry Rides Again is, of course, a comedy, and where Dietrich sings, she sings the classic song that I'll bet everybody remembers a little bit of, "See What the Boys in the Back Room mm-hmm. Will Have." And because, of course, that Marlena is plays a saloon hall gal, it's intimated that she's a prostitute. In this film, she ultimately sacrifices her life for James Stewart, who is the young do-gooding sheriff who falls in love with her. And it's a very funny film. We see, a different side of Dietrich in it. And Jimmy Stewart, it's one of his first films where he really, I think, sprang to public attention because of this film. He was just completely charismatic and so charming in it. It's a wonderful film, and it also co-stars the wonderful Una Merkel, who plays one of the kind of upright women of the town, and she is very, very funny in that film.
Mm. And there's that great kiss. You know, so often at the end of someone's life in a Western, they're going to get kissed.
Yes.
But this kiss is really, it's unique. Because she takes her arm and wipes off all the lipstick and rouge.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, before she plants one on the sheriff.
On our young Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful scene. And it's, I don't know, it's touching and it's comic at the same time, even though she's given her life. It's sort of sadly comic, I suppose.
Yeah, well, Destiny Rides Again was adapted from a novel by Max Brand, and he had, I think, as a writer, a strong sense of sort of pathos and humor. He was able to weave the two together. The comedy western is a kind of a subgenre of the form, and includes some wonderful films. The Rounders is another one with Glenn Ford. Of course, Cat Ballou with Jane Fonda. And The Beautiful Blonde from Bashful Bend with Barbara Hutton.
And didn't Bob Hope make a western?
Yes, he did, but you know what? That one's not in our book.
7,000 movies you had to choose from.
Well, you can't see them all. We saw almost 300 and then stopped.
So, but Tall in the Saddle, as I understand it, you've got more than 350 lines and from 150 movies.
Yeah.
It must have been awfully difficult to choose. What kind of conversations went on between the two of you over what was going to go in and what wouldn't go in?
Well, I want people to know that we watched all the movies that the quotes come from, all the way through. So we'd be sitting there, and one of them would say, oh, that's a good line, that's a good line. And the other one would say, no, I don't like it. So that's how we went. And if we both agreed, then we wrote it down. And in the end, then our editor picked, because I think from some really good movies we'd have, you know, 10 or a dozen lines, and others there was just one line, but it was terrific.
Hmm. Well, before we move on to some dialogue from Stagecoach, I thought we should hear Frenchie sing. What do you say?
Oh, yes.
Okay, here she is.
What the boys in the back room will have, and tell them I'm having the same. Go see what the boys in the back room will have, and give them the poison they name. And when I die, don't spend my money on flowers and my picture in a frame. Just see what the boys in the back room will have, and tell them I sighed, and tell them I cried.
From Destry Rides Again, Frenchie, the character played by Marlena Dietrich. Lots of stock characters in westerns, and I'm wondering if what you would have to say about the use of stock characters, you know, thinking about the good guys wear white hats and the bad guys wear black hats and that kind of thing. The stock characters and the stock situations, they work despite the fact that we know these characters. How come they're so successful?
We both look at each other, urging the other one to answer that fairly complex question. I'll take a stab at it. I think, in a sense, they work because they are stock characters. The thing about westerns is that they're simple tales, and they are often, not always, but often about morality, about the battle between good and evil. And so when we're watching stock characters, we have so much information already at our fingertips. We know who all these people are. So the fun of watching the story is, how is it going to unfurl this time? And what are the flourishes and what are the feathers that they're going to add to these stock characters to make the story illuminate a very familiar situation, the battle between good and evil, in a new way? And I guess that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit like fairy tales in that sense.
Uh-huh.
They're a little bit like old myths. It's not so much that's kind of, I think, part of the appeal of them, is that we know we're going to see the stock characters. We know there's going to be a chase. We know there's going to be a battle. We know there's going to be a showdown. We know there's going to be a love affair. And often there's going to be a song. And that's kind of the fun of it all, I think.
Yeah. Saeko, earlier you mentioned, you know, part of the appeal of the Western is that you can move on. You can recreate yourself. And so the stock characters have these characters have a chance at redemption, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And they've got a chance to make it. I mean, you know, they can go out there and stake a gold claim or start a ranch or, you know, go out west, start a new life. Bad people can turn into good people by meeting the challenges of the frontier. Yeah, that's the sort of thing I like.
Yeah. I want to play a scene from Stagecoach. It's early in the film where we meet a couple of characters, a drunk doctor, played by Thomas Mitchell, and a woman we assume is of, as they say, easy virtue, Claire Trevor. And they are being booted out of town, you know, by the upstanding citizens of the community. Here's that scene.
Doc! Doc, can they make me leave town when I don't want to go? Do I have to
go? Now, Dallas, don't you go making no fuss.
Do I have to go, Doc, just because they say so?
Now, Dallas, I've got my orders. Don't blame these ladies. It ain't them.
It is them! Doc, haven't I any right to live? What have I done?
We're the victims of a foul disease called social prejudice, my child. These dear ladies of the Law and Order League are scouring out the dregs of the town. Come on. They are proud, glorified dreg like me.
You get going, Doc. You're drunk.
Two of the kind. Just two of the kind.
Take my arm, Madame la Comtesse. The tumbril awaits for the guillotine.
Oh, wait till I get my badge, girls. I'll join you.
Be a proud dreg like me. That's a line that I really am fond of. And, of course, these two turn out to be okay. They'll come through for their fellow travelers on that stagecoach. While later we'll learn that an upstanding guy around town, the banker, turns out to be no good. I think that also lets us cheer a little, that we can feel that we've got room for improvement, and that we can pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off. So I don't know. And there's also a great line also from the banker early in that film where he says, "What's good for the banks is good for the country." So there's some political kind of, I don't know, maybe that's a stretch. I don't know. You want to jump in and...
Yeah, well, Stagecoach is kind of all about the wrong people doing the right things. It is Claire Trevor and the doctor and John Wayne as an outlaw, Ringo the Kid, who save the, you know, quote unquote good citizens who are in the Stagecoach that's under attack. And so, that's one of the fun things about playing with stock characters is that you can flip them around and reverse them. So these stock characters, in fact, turn out to be anti-heroes or heroes, and they're the ones who save the day. And at the end of the film, it's interesting because Westerns tend to have, well, there's many endings, but there are two that are very significant in the genre. One is that you kind of clean up the mess and then you stay and you settle down, or you move further on to the frontier, and at the end of Stagecoach, Claire Trevor and John Wayne team up, don't settle down, though they move further west, leaving so-called civilization and the forces of morality behind them. They're going to go further west, where that kind of hypocrisy, supposedly, hopefully, it hasn't had a chance to establish itself yet.
Yet.
Yeah, because that is another theme of the Westerns, which is, you know, first there's going out to a new land, but then there's the fact that civilization and its evils are always, and its good parts, are just about to catch up to you. They're right behind you. And this is often shown by having the school teacher was always a sign of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
The preacher was a sign of civilization in the first place. So sometimes they became tamed and stayed, and other times, as Peggy said, they just move along farther west.
And I think it's kind of worth remembering that a lot of the filmmakers and the filmmaking teams, the directors, the writers, the actors, the directors of photography, many of them moved overnight. You know, the studio system shifted very suddenly in the late 40s. Subgenres like film noir kind of stopped being made almost overnight, and Western started to be made. So you had teams of people who were very used to making films that were morality plays, very much about the battle between the dark side and the cynical hero in the film noir, found themselves literally the next day on the back lot of studios making Westerns. And so a lot of those themes, you know, you get the layering of the themes, the kind of simple morality plays of the Westerns and the cynicism of the film noir and the sophistication of a lot of the Hollywood players all kind of came together to create. I mean, there are some Westerns that are absolutely brilliant films and stand on their own against any genre. Stagecoach, of course, is one of them. It's one of the first films I saw at film school, and they're still showing it.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first films I saw in a film class that I took.
Right after the silent ones, they show you Stagecoach.
Yep, we saw some surrealistic kind of films, and then Stagecoach.
It was a pretty refreshing film.
It was. It was. We saw a film by Louis Buñuel and Salvador Dali, and it was really wild, and some film by Jean Cocteau. I remember those so well. And then we saw Stagecoach, and we felt so good after seeing that movie. It was like, wow, this is something we kind of have a better feel for. You know, when you're that age, it's something that you can relate to.
Yeah, and Stagecoach really appeals to young people because it's all about the disenfranchised taking over. So it's a film that a lot of young people can relate to.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we're remembering the Western. We are looking back at the dialogue of the Western and the genre celebration of the frontier myth. We have two guests with us this afternoon. They've put together a collection of great lines of dialogue, as well as posters and photos from classic Westerns in a book titled Tall in the Saddle. Our guests are Sayeko Usukawa. She's an editor. She's been editing books for some 30 years now, and she's now editorial director of Douglas and McIntyre. Also with us, Peggy Thompson. She's a screenwriter of feature films and shorts and radio drama as well. She's an assistant professor of screenwriting at the University of British Columbia. If you'd like to talk with us this afternoon, give us a call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else you're listening, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Peggy, you mentioned film noir, and it's sort of meeting up with the Western. And it's interesting that the two of you also collaborated on a collection of lines from film noir. Are there echoes in the lines of film noir? I mean, do they resonate? Can you hear Western characters saying film noir lines, or film noir characters sort of using Western lines?
Well, in fact, yes, you can. I think there's a whole subgenre of Westerns, again, called kind of noir Westerns, often made by the same people, and one that comes to mind is Johnny Guitar, by director Nicholas Ray, who was a well-known director of film noir, and it's referred to as a gothic romance. It's a kind of demented Western. Joan Crawford plays a tough saloon owner, and she has a great line that could have come from a film noir. A man can lie, cheat, and steal, but as long as he hangs on to his pride, he's still a man. All a woman has to do is slip once, and she's a tramp.
Mm. Nice.
From the Lon Jake Wade, another one that might be considered kind of a noir-like Western. Sonny, I can see we ain't going to have you around long enough to get tired of your company.
But then you look big enough to handle a little trouble.
Mm.
And of course, you know, people like Barbara Stanwyck, who made some of the great noirs, also made some of the great westerns. Sam Fuller's 40 Guns, Barry Sullivan and Barbara Stanwyck. He says to her, "What's the matter? You look upset." And she says, "I was born upset." I adore Barbara Streisand, Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah. Now, the two of you, are you... Do you get so involved with doing these books and you know, using the language that you are using these lines in your life?
If I, it's hard to imagine getting away with these lines.
That sounds like a line itself. That would be yes.
I don't know. I think I'd like to try it out.
I recommend it. I actually am not afraid to quote from these films in my screenwriting class, much to the horror of my students who, you know, often find them a bit cheesy, but usually win them over by the end of the term.
Now, how do students in a screenwriting class in 1998, what movies, what westerns do they enjoy? What ones do they think are just, you know, it's eye-rolling time?
Well, it was interesting. When I started working on this film, we had a meeting in September, of all the graduate students, and it was just an opportunity for everybody to get to know each other. So somebody said, "Oh, you're doing a book on Westerns. I know, let's all say our favorite Western." And I thought, oh, my God, you know, these people are even seeing Westerns, you know, these graduate students at the university and Department of Film and Creative Writing. But everybody had a favorite Western. It was astonishing. I think because although some of the films... You know, certainly by today's standards, you know, they're racist. They're all these things. Some of the worst ones. There's enough spirit of rebellion and enough about the underdog rising up and taking over that whether you're a woman or whoever you are, you can find a Western that will speak to you about your own personal struggle, I think.
Hmm.
So it was really interesting. Everyone had a favorite Western. And I have a student who's writing a Western, a revisionist Western about a suffragette, but a Western. So it's a form that has been declared dead since the day it was born, and yet it continues to reinvent itself. I mean, certainly there's that wonderful scene in Smoke Signals where the two guys are on the bus and they start singing that song about John Wayne's teeth that is, you know, kind of a direct reference to the Western. And it's just... fantastic moment in the film.
The films that your students mentioned, can you recall what some of a couple of their favorites?
Yeah, they a lot of them remembered a film called Support Your Local Sheriff with James Garner, a comedy. Ride the High Country, High Noon. Was very popular. And then a lot of people, too, remembered the Westerns from watching them on TV when they were young, because through the 50s and 60s, there were just Westerns on television kind of every night. So people remembered them from there. Cat Ballou, I think, was one. And, of course, everyone had seen the Clint Eastwood film, Unforgiven.
Sure.
And really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Dances with Wolves also, of course.
Yeah. The Western, thinking about this genre of films last night, I pulled a clip last night from The Magnificent Seven. And, of course, this film, the idea for this film came from a Japanese film, Kurosawa's Seven Samurai. And, Peggy, you mentioned Clint Eastwood, and he worked in a lot of so-called spaghetti Westerns before he made his first Western in the United States. The influences of, maybe you could talk about, the two of you could share with us how different cultures have influenced the Western and how the Western has influenced filmmakers in other countries.
Right. Well, the Seven, the Magnificent Seven is one of my favorite Westerns, and as you said, it was based on Kurosawa's Seven Samurai. But Kurosawa himself says that the Seven Samurai was based on Westerns. So we have this loop.
Right.
And I think that the samurai code was sort of like the Western code, where your word was your bond. There was the thing about good and evil, you know, in each case, bandits, preying on poor people. And people who were honor-bound enough to defend them, even though they started out as being mercenaries, you know, it soon dawned on them that they were here to fight to the death for, you know, really not for the money, but because it was the right thing to do. About the spaghetti westerns, I don't know where that came from at all. You know, just the word spaghetti western is kind of a bizarre hybrid, and Italians and westerns, I don't know, but the only reaction we got from a reader was from Italy, to Tal Nassau.
Really?
Yes, so, you know, there is some strange bond that we don't understand, but I don't know any Italians to ask them about it.
Well, the French love Jerry Lewis, right?
Yes, and Italians love Westerns.
And Italians love Westerns. Let's, why don't we hear, just, I have a really quick clip from The Magnificent Seven, and we've got some farmers who have big trouble on their hands, and they need some gunfighters, and Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen are going to help them out, but here they are. This is a really quick clip. Here they're out on this mission to round up some gunfighters.
Valgame Dios, there's one. Look at the scars on his face.
The man for us is the one who gave him that face.
Hey, you learn fast.
Learning quickly. Out there,
yeah,
on the frontier.
It's a deeply cynical film, certainly at the beginning. Who was that? Was that Yul Brynner and one of the
and two of the farmers? One farmer says, "Look at that guy over there. You know, he's got all these scars on his face. You know, but he could be our guy." And one of the other farmers says, "No, who we want is the man who gave him those scars, gave him that face." And Yul Brynner says, "Hey, you learn pretty quickly."
And another line from Yul Brynner, when one of the peasants is speaking to him, very young, very proud, he says, of one of the young gunfighters, and Yul Brynner says, "The graveyards are full of the very young and the very proud."
Mm.
Speaking of Kurosawa, of course, he was also, one of his films, The Hidden Fortress, was of course, one of the enormous influences on the film Star Wars. So there's an incredible link between American popular culture and Akira Kurosawa, who's really one of the last great filmmakers of this century, who's still alive, who's still with us.
Mm. Was Yojimbo the basis for a Western film, and was it, in fact, a spaghetti Western?
Yeah. It could be, because Yojimbo is sort of this, you know, just the way there were gunfighters roaming around in the West looking for people to hire them. There were, at a certain stage in Japanese history, there were samurai who were trained fighters, who were also sort of hired swords who would go out and fight for people. And Yojimbo also had this sort of wry, ironic comic element, which does appear in the Sergio Leone westerns, and, you know, also has the lone hero who doesn't talk much but can do impossible things like fight 40 people and win.
The man with no name. Very much like that character. Yes, yeah, so, because, of course, Kurosawa, as a child, you know, like so many people in the world, went to the movies and saw the American westerns, you know. And I bet Leone did too, because of course American culture was all over the world, and so you had this amazing flow and interchange of mythologies and storytelling, and Kurosawa loved all the American genres. He made film noir, he made these kind of western easterns, and also of course comedies and dramas.
Mm. I thought we might play another scene from another film now at this point. It's a scene from The Gunfighter. And I think this is an interesting theme in Westerns where your past can catch up with you, so you got to keep moving on. And Gregory Peck in this film plays Jimmy Ringo, and I wonder if that name Ringo is in honor of Ringo the Kid from Stagecoach. I don't know, but anyway, Gregory Peck plays Jimmy Ringo, who is a gunfighter, and this film is set in the Southwest in 1880, so the frontier has really moved west, and it's a bar room, and if I'm not mistaken, viewers come into this scene hearing Beautiful Dreamer in the background, you know, on the piano. Anything the two of you would like to say about The Gunfighter?
I just remember it as one of Gregory Peck's really good westerns. It's really about the fact that, you know, violence is a way of life, doesn't really get you anywhere, and that those who live by the gun will die by the gun.
Okay, let's hear this scene. This is from The Gunfighter, and we've got a kid who's spoiling for a fight, and he challenges Jimmy Ringo.
Hey, Chuck, how about a little service down here? That's if Mr. Frazzlebottom, or whatever his name is, don't object.
Eddie, don't you know who this is?
You mean it ain't Mr. Frazzlebottom?
It's Jimmy Ringo, Eddie.
Well, it looks like Mr. Frazzlebottom to me.
You ever heard anybody kid like him?
How about a drink, Mr. Frazzlebottom?
No, thanks.
How's that, Mr. Frazzlebottom?
Eddie, please.
Please what? I asked a man to have a drink with me. What's wrong with that? How about it, Mr. Frazzlebottom?
Okay, partner.
I knew Mr. Frazzlebottom wasn't going to pass up a free one.
Don't you understand, Eddie? This is Jimmy Ringo.
All right, so it's Jimmy Ringo. So what's everybody supposed to do, fall on their knees?
Well, you can be a little polite, at least.
Mr. Ringo, Chuck figures you got a little extra consideration coming to you around here. Is that right?
No.
How's that, Mr. Ringo? You'll have to speak up if you want me to hear you.
Why don't you button up your britches and go home?
How'd you like to try to make me, Mr. Ringo?
Now, listen, partner. I come in here minding my own business. Now, how about letting me go out the same way?
I want to know first what you meant by that remark you just passed.
Tell you what. You just bought me a drink. Now I'll buy you one and then we'll drop it. What do you say? Give him a drink for me.
Never mind the drink. I want to know what you meant by the remark you passed.
Listen, Eddie.
I ain't talking to you. I'm talking to Mr. Ringo. I want to know what you meant by that remark you passed.
How come I gotta run into a squirt like you nearly every place I go these days? What are you trying to do, show off in front of your friends?
Are you ready to back up that remark or not?
What about this? Ain't some of you fellas in charge of this donkey?
I'm telling you, Mr. Ringo!
Eddie don't mean no real harm, Mr. Ringo.
Then let Eddie keep his big ugly nose out of my business if he don't want to get it slapped. Did you see that?
Yes, sir. He drew first.
Do you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yes, sir, I saw it. Except I'd get on out of town anyway if I was you.
Why?
Because he's got three brothers that ain't going to care who drew first.
From The Gunfighter, Gregory Peck playing Jimmy Ringo. Button up your britches and go home. Do you have some favorite put-downs from Westerns? You've got a lot of great ones in the book, Tall in the Saddle.
There was one in The Gunfighter itself, where one person says, "He don't look so tough to me." And someone says, "If he ain't so tough, there's been an awful lot of sudden natural deaths in his vicinity."
In Tribute to a Bad Man, which just kind of shows that really everybody was in a Western. It had Irene Papas in it. She tells a young would-be cowboy,
That's what a wrangler is, and nobody on a horse with bad teeth, broken bones, a double hernia, and life.
Mm.
In Along Came Jones, Loretta Young, who made a number of westerns, tells Gary Cooper about her her gunfighting skills. That's just to show you, when I aim at something, I hit it, and when I hit something, that's what I aimed at. Cattle Queen of Montana. Ruggles of Red Gap, one character says, that woman could bite through nails, his friend agrees. She chews them instead of gum.
Mm. Do the two of you have another collection planned?
Science fiction next, I think.
Science fiction. Oh, that'll be
boldly
good.
Boldly going.
Of course. Well, speaking of boldly going, we have to wrap up here pretty quickly. And I thought it would be fitting to close with a very famous scene from Shane. Any quick comments about Shane?
One of Alan Ladd's finest moments, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I want to thank the two of you very much for talking with us this afternoon. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you very
much. Thank you, Celeste.
Peggy Thompson and Sayeko Osakawa. Look for their book, Tall in the Saddle. Of course, that's the ending to Shane. And you know, when I watched that ending last night, I was surprised to recall that Alan Ladd, as Shane, rides off not into the sunset, but into a very stormy kind of landscape, into very stormy skies.